Tomorrow afternoon when we do the Harris Challenge right after the 5 o'clock news, our grand prize is going to be a great piece of animation art. It's a Bugs Bunny serigraph cell that we got from Great American Ink, a premier art gallery in Los Angeles. It's also online at greatamericaninc.com. They specialize in a lot of this vintage animation art, much of it from the Looney Tunes days, where that music came from. And, of course, the voice of so many characters in those Looney Tunes cartoons was a man by the name of Mel Blanc, who we lost in 1989. And I'll never forget this full-page ad that was put in some trade publications and in a couple of newspapers. It showed Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck and Foghorn Leghorn and Yosemite Sam and Porky Pig and Pepe Le Pew and Sylvester and Tweety and Speedy Gonzales all standing with their heads bowed around a lone microphone with a spotlight shining on it. And the simple inscription on that print was "Speechless." That has been turned into a lithograph and is itself a very valuable piece of animation art. Mel Blanc's son, Noel, kind of picked up the torch a little bit for his dad after Mel taught him some of those voices. And I've asked him to join us here this afternoon and talk about both his dad's legacy and animation art as well. Hi, Noel. How are you?
What's up, Paul?
As my daddy used to say.
Great being on the show on KMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMMM
had back in 1988 when he came out with his book, That's Not All, Folks.
Right.
And I introduced him as the man of a thousand voices, and he immediately corrected me, and he said, nope, closer to 850.
850, but, you know, one time we put a count to it, it came over 1,500.
Is that right?
Yeah, because, you know, he did things that he didn't even remember. He was at every studio. Not only did he invent the voice of Woody Woodpecker, but all the Looney Tunes, well, that was for, you know, Walter Lance, but all the Looney Tunes were him. And then on a cartoon that might have 15 voices, you know, other than Daffy, Tweety, Sylvester, Porky, all the main ones, Bugs, he would do all the odd characters. I've counted 20 voices on one cartoon. Then he went over to Hanna-Barbera and did the Flintstones. You know, he was Dino the Dinosaur, and he was Barney Rubble, and a lot of odd voices. And then on the Jetsons, a lot of odd voices, especially Spacely. He was all over the place. You know, Tom and Jerry, when they made sounds, that was him. So it wasn't just Warner's. He was just, although he did just one hiccup for Disney.
Is that right?
Yeah, Walt Disney loved him. In fact, the Disney people loved him so much, but he couldn't work for them because he was with Warner Brothers. So, but when Walt passed away and they had the big 10th anniversary of Disney World, guess who was the Grand Marshal? My dad, and he had only done one hiccup. And the reason he had only done one hiccup was because during Pinocchio's recording, they wanted Gideon, the cat, to be drunk. And Dad did about 4 weeks' work as Gideon, and he was higher than heck, and I was sounding drunker than anything.
Yep.
And Walt listened to it and says, we don't want a drunken cat. We just give him one hiccup.
That's it.
That was it.
Well, it doesn't matter, though. Your dad got the check, didn't he?
Yeah, he got $800 for one hiccup.
That's a pretty good paycheck. Now you of course, did Porky and Bugs there, and your dad taught you how to do a lot of his voices, but well, you decided never to make it a full-time job, right?
That's right, because I directed him. We had a production company, and we did commercials and television shows for over 35 years. And, I never was the voice man, but he says, you know, Noel, you can do, you know, Bugs, Porky, Daffy, Tweety, Sylvester, Speedy, a few of those. Why don't you try it? So I ended up doing Tweety and Sylvester and Porky and Daffy. And, of course, he did 1,500. I say I do 9 well.
That's still pretty good.
We're all copies, you know, and there are a lot of copies out there. And he was the original. He invented all these voices.
Now, give me a little bit of the history of why does Porky Pig stammer like that?
Well, you know, it's really not a stammer. My dad went out to the pig farm to get a boy. You know, he always liked reality. He was a method actor. He liked to really turn into the character. And he went out to the pig farm, wallowed around with the pigs for a while, and they went back to Warner Brothers, and they said, Mel, would you take a bath and then come back here? He took a bath, went back to Warner Brothers, and he says, you know, a pig talks with a grunt. And it's a grunt, get around. It's not a stutter. It's not a stammer. It's a grunt.
Uh huh.
And that's what happened with Porky Pig. He became the grunting Porky. And the funny thing with Porky is he always changes that last word, you know, into something you don't think he's going for, and then switches it.
Right. Now, I know that in animation, they always record the voice first, and then they draw the animation to that voice. That still goes on to this day with The Simpsons and animated movies and all of that stuff. But did your dad get to see drawings of what the character was going to look like, and did he ever base the voice on how a character looked first?
Always. He always saw them, as they call it, the model sheet of the character. And when they first showed him Bugs Bunny, Bugs had these great big teeth. And the teeth stuck out of his head, so the first voice that Dad did for Bugs was a voice that sounded like this. And you hear the old cartoons about 3 or 4, and it was like, Doc. And, you know, my dad was talking to Fritz Freeling. He says, can't we bring the teeth in so that I can talk like a regular rabbit? So it came, you know, from that voice to me, what's up, Doc? But that metamorphosis took about 7 or 8 cartoons before he became Bugs that we know now.
It's News Talk 1120 KMOX. Paul Harris talking with Noel Blank about his father, the great Mel Blank, the man of 1,500 voices. I want to ask you about a rumor that I've heard for years, because I know some people who work in the animation business, and nobody could tell me whether this was true or not. I heard that your dad got into a car accident, I think it was sometime in the early 60s, and was actually in a coma for a while. And when he came out of the coma, he didn't speak as Mel Blank. He spoke as Bugs Bunny.
And that was a very interesting... I was there when that happened.
Is that true?
Yes, you know, he got in a car accident on Dead Man's Curve. The, you know, Dan and Jean...
Jan and Dean. You almost pulled a Porky Pig there.
Porky Pig, Jan and Dean. Anyway, on the Dead Man's Curve around UCLA, and they didn't think he was going to live. He broke virtually every bone in his body and was in a coma for about 12 days. And the one doctor who was a brain surgeon said he had an idea, because he always had the television on in Mel's room in case he would become alert to the television. And that particular day, he saw the Looney Tunes. So he tried something after about, I think it was about 9 days of coma. I've got it all written down. But he said, Bugs, can you hear me? Bugs, can you hear me? And the first words that he says is, yeah, wake up, Doc. And he's, Porky, can you hear me? So he went through the whole bunch of characters and brought my dad out of the coma that way with the characters. It was pretty amazing.
That's unbelievable.
It is a true story.
I'm glad you could verify that for me. Yes. Now another rumor that I've heard.
A carrot rumor, I'm sure.
Is that George Lucas auditioned your dad to be the voice of C-3PO in the original Star Wars, but decided he was not right for the role.
No, that's not true. I never saw, never heard that one, nor was part of that. You know the story of the porpoise, though, with George C. Scott? He was going to do the fa of the porpoise.
In Day of the Dolphin.
The Day of the Dolphin, yeah. And he did audition for that, and they said, no, I think we'll just, we can't pay your price, we'll just have somebody, one of the crew, do that. So the crew ended up doing fa. But then there was another rumor that he hated carrots, remember?
Yeah.
And that he was allergic to carrots.
Not true.
But that's not true because, you know, only a carrot sounds like a carrot. So if you chew a turnip, which you don't really want to do, or a potato or a celery, it doesn't sound like a carrot. So at every recording session, he had to bite the carrot and go, meh, what's up, Doc? Well, you bite a carrot and chew it and try to say, meh, what's up, Doc, with a mouthful of carrots. You can't do it.
Right.
So he had to spit them out in a wastebasket and then go, what's up, Doc? And everybody thought, oh, gee, he must be allergic to carrots because he can't eat them. But that's not true. He loved carrots, but he had to spit them out to say, what's up, Doc?
Once your dad taught you how to do some of these voices, would you talk to each other as the characters at home?
Oh, yes. We had a lot of fun doing that.
Like if he got mad at you as a, you know, you're a young kid and here he is, your dad, he's come home from a long day of voice sessions or whatever it is, would he turn into Foghorn Leghorn?
Foghorn or Yosemite Sam, both of which I don't do. And yes, definitely. And he could shout, boy. But he was always good-hearted, and his anger only lasted for seconds. And then he just settled down, and that was it. He blurted it out. You know, in fact, in recording sessions, I used to see that, because when a director didn't know what he was doing, he said, Mel, can you try it this way? Well, how about this way? And Mel always at the beginning would say, please, just tell me how you want it, and I'll give it to you that way.
Yeah.
And the director says, well, let's try it this way. Well, he'd get mad at the director, because the director never really heard what he really wanted Mel to do. So he was just, you know, having Mel do a whole bunch of different things until he finally said, oh, maybe that's it. And Dad would get so upset because he was a one-take guy. They said, Bugs is like this, and he's angry, and he does this. And Dad would do it in one take.
Would there be directors who would come to him in the later years after he had been doing Bugs for a couple of decades and say, look, this is how Bugs should sound?
Yes. Yes. And, oh, he'd get so upset with that.
You're going to tell me how Bugs is going to sound?
Yeah, I've been doing it for 40 years. What do you mean how he should sound?
Did your dad have a rivalry with any of these other great cartoon voices? I mean, the public may not know the name of a guy like Dawes Butler.
No, he liked Dawes, and Dawes was a very, very good voice man. Over at Hanna-Barbera, he did a lot of cartoons.
He was the voice of Fred Flintstone, right?
No, that was Alan Reed.
Oh, okay.
And then when Alan passed away, a fellow by the name of Henry Corden took over.
Okay.
But Dawes did Yogi Bear and things like that, Huckleberry Hound. He was very versatile. The difference between my dad and Dawes copied usually well-known actor voices, funny people, and used their voices as the cartoon character. My dad never really copied any of the famous voice people, whether it's Jimmy Stewart or Gabby Hayes or whatever it might have been. He really just invented all those voices and never really copied any. But they loved each other, and I think every voice person really knew that Mel was way up. He was the Elvis Presley of voices, you know. He was the Roy Rogers of cowboys. He was the Frank Sinatra of popular. He was the king of that voice area in show business, because he was the only name known, and he was doing virtually every voice around at one time.
Was there ever a voice or a sound that he was asked to do that he just couldn't come up with?
No, I remember Jack Benny asked him to do an English horse. Remember what he mean? He went, you know, whatever he did with the whistle, and the English laugh at the end of the horse, and it was wonderful. He came up with every single voice that Jack Benny used to try to catch him on different voices, and so did the directors. But he would. The Tasmanian Devil was tough. And he went to Tasmania, believe it or not. When they were down there, my mom and he, they went and visited the zoo, and the Tasmanian Devil, of course, was eating everything, and he figured that's the way it's got to sound, you know. Just eating and eating away. So he would come up with every voice challenge.
Now, I think it's interesting that most of this stuff has been preserved now in the DVD era, and even in the online era, there is this stuff that'll be there for perpetuity, the work that your dad did. But the other interesting part of it is the animation art side of this.
Animation art is amazing, because, you know, the art was basically worthless at one time. You do sell 24 of these wonderful pieces of animation, which are, you know, large, 11 by 14 or 10 by 12. Each person had to hand draw 24 frames per second.
Right.
You can imagine, like in a Disney, an hour and a half, there were thousands and thousands and thousands of these pieces of art done. Well, when it was all done, and they photographed them under the camera, one at a time, they said, what are we going to do with all this art? You know what they did? They washed a lot of it off.
Is that right?
Threw a lot of it away. Who would know that 20 years, 30 years later, you know, Steven Spielberg would be spending $250,000 on a Snow White? But most of this art was given away. My dad used to take bundles of it. They say, Mel, can you take these cells and give them away to the kids? And my dad used to hand them out at the door every day and sign them. And I say those same kids come back in their Ferraris and said, thanks, Mel.
The fascinating thing to me about the animation art, particularly the 50s, 60s, and 70s, was because they already had this stuff there, and before they threw it away, they did reuse a lot of it, which is why if you watch a cartoon from that era, like a Roadrunner cartoon, you'll see them go by the same cactus about 6 times in 10 seconds.
Yes. And by the way, Roadrunner cartoon material is rare, as is Yosemite Sam, Porky Pig. Some of the original Porky Pigs are going for huge prices now. Can I give you a telephone number?
Absolutely.
I want everybody to call this number, because it's an amazing number. You can ask anything you want about cartoons and at the same time get a free brochure, and there's no obligation or anything. This is Great American Ink out here in California, and we have the largest collection of animation art you've ever seen. I've been a spokesman for about 15 years. But you should see this collection of animation art. It's not only Disney, you know, with a Snow White and Pinocchio and Goofy and Minnie and Donald and Bambi and, you know, Tinkerbell, but also Bugs, Porky, Daffy, Tweety, Sylvester, Taz, all the great material, Woody Woodpecker, the Flintstones. And they've saved this and found these collections hiding in every part of the world. They've got probably the largest collection of animation art, and for a free brochure, you can call this number. Stand by. Here's the number, 1-800-552-BUGS. So if you call 1-800-552-BUGS, there's people there, you know, right now that'll tell you all about animation art, send you a brochure, and you won't believe what we still have that was taken out of the back of these studios because it was worthless at one time. And, you know, used to walk down, I would walk down Disneyland area, and on the Main Street, they would sell this for $4 and $5, a great Pinocchio with a background. My gosh, all I had to do was collect about 15 of those and could retire.
And any idea what the most valuable animation cell is right now?
Oh, I imagine it's half a million to $1 million because there are such rare, especially that early Disney art and the early Warner's art, has got to be worth just a fortune because it was all washed off or thrown away, and nobody really cared about it. It was beautiful art.
Well, I'm proud to say that I own one of those rare Roadrunner cells that you mentioned. I got it about 15 years ago from a friend of mine in the business, and it hangs proudly in my office. And I never think of it as an investment. I just think of it as a flashback to my childhood.
You know, I never sell this stuff as investment either. I never say, hey, buy it and you'll get rich. That's not part of it. The part of it is to hang it on the wall and enjoy it because it's really Americana. It's the kind of art that was born and raised in America. The characters live on after 70 years, and in some Disney characters, 80 or 90 years. And it's just, I think Bugs is coming up on its 60th anniversary or 70th anniversary, 1936. Sure, 1938 is its 70th anniversary. And some of this is, so you'll think, it's, you know, it's antique already.
Yeah.
And it's all brilliantly done by all these great artists and directors like Chuck Jones and Frizz Freleng and Bob McKimson. They all put their input and did these incredible pieces of art. So I'm going to give you that number one more time.
Okay.
1-800, that's an 800 number, 552-BUGS. And if you call it 552-BUGS, Bugs, we'll send out all this wonderful, wonderful animation art on a brochure that I always say, if you're a cheapo, you can hang the brochure on the wall.
Well, I'm happy to help you plug it because Great American Ink was kind enough to give us a Bugs cell that we're going to give away tomorrow afternoon when we do the Harris Challenge. And Noel, I really appreciate your time this afternoon. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you. And as Porky Pig would say, first of all, it's stay tuned and listen to Paul Harris. Don't forget to say the that's all, folks.
Noel Blank here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.